Good evening and welcome to this week's edition of Editing Aloud. My name is Ron Derby, standing for Peter Bruce. I guess the big story of the week, starting with you, Lokanyo, is the State of the Nation tomorrow. What's your expectations from the second sona from Cyril Ramaphosa?
Yeah, it's amazing, Ron, how quickly a year has gone. So now this is the second one. Obviously, the irony is that some of the big issues are still the same big issues that were the big issues last year, this time last year. You know, if you think about it, this time last year we had a new board at Eskom.
Yep.
And now this year the president is going to talk about a new plan or a new dawn for Eskom.
Yeah.
And but it seems like we've had to wait really for a year for the crisis to really hit to the point where, like, now we actually think this thing could collapse at any moment. So hopefully we'll have a bit more substance this time. And I suppose the criticism will always be, like, you know, some of the stuff he's going to mention tomorrow, it's probably stuff he mentioned last year. For example, he made a big deal last year about the visa, that visas, making ease of entry into the country, the whole traveling thing with children. None of that has actually changed. So, like I was saying to somebody, it would be quite funny if you have a copy and paste of that same promise on those issues. So there's an element, I mean, like, as he was saying in the mining endeavor, it looks like he's really ready for action. But then a lot of these things are not going to be new things. They're things that were promised 12 months ago. So let's hopefully this time around he can convince the country that we actually can move on.
Siko, I mean, in the past couple of weeks, there's been all this almost building up to a big announcement with regards to Eskom. That's the biggest fiscal risk for the country, for the state. Do you, I mean, there's always been talk about a breakup of Eskom. Do you see any big announcement with regards to Eskom tomorrow? Because it can't be saying, as the kind of says, more of the same, we're restructuring. There has to be some big structural shift when it comes to Eskom. What do you foresee?
The government, certainly the African National Congress government, is not known for big action. It is definitely known for big promises. So we'll have those big promises again tomorrow afternoon. And then the damn squib of an announcement.
Be fair, but there's been something.
They are comrades. The people who put Cyril Ramaphosa in the union buildings have already the NUM and NUMSA, the largest trade unions at Eskom, they are already planning a protest for next week, protesting against a breakup of Eskom. Now, mind you, they are not yet protesting against privatization of Eskom. They are protesting against a breakup. So Cyril will say, we will again. We will break Eskom into two, the distribution and generation company.
No longer three is three off the table, wasn't it?
It's now two. The panel has recommended that someone will, one company will own the grid infrastructure, the transmission and distribution. Then one company will really own the power stations and generate the electricity. So there will still be another system. They must pass a law in Parliament, by the way, to do all of this. There must still be another third company that will own distribution, in which then they can introduce the intermediary that will sell electricity, because then private.
But ISMO, what was that?
ISMO,
was
yes.
The ISMO, yes. The yes. Independent system.
Exactly, independent system market operator.
Yeah.
That will then will be an independent company that will own will buy the electricity from Eskom, the generator, and from the other power producers, and distribute it into the system. All of that was what Alec Aaron, remember him?
Yeah, 2001.
Trade and Industry Minister, way back before many people in this studio were born. they were talking exactly. Same plan.
Yeah.
That big promise.
But that was when privatization was. I mean, the whole purpose of DPE was to sell off some of the state assets. That was the story then, right?
Did anyone come back and say we're not doing it anymore?
Yeah, well. So what do you expect, Warren, with regards to Sona tomorrow?
Yeah, certainly we, as I think Lukanya has pointed out, we need to see concrete things. We talk a lot in this country about the way things should be, and there's a lot of ideas. I mean, we've still got that national development plan that somehow is supposed to be the blueprint for the country moving forward. So perhaps what I'd like to see from the president is a bit of guidance as to if that's still valid. Is the NDP that we invested so much time and energy drafting going to be used, or are we going to put that on the bookshelf with Skisa and let it gather dust and gear and all the other economic plans that came before it? Or are we actually going to put it to work? So Very difficult situation, like, given the fiscus and the state of the fiscus at the moment.
But clearly, you can't fault this country for at least thinking. I mean, we always come with these plans and so on. But
How useful is that thinking when it translates to absolutely nothing on the ground? The people need jobs, yes. Real jobs. Mm. Investors need to be allowed to get on with it. We keep thinking and making these beautiful plans, like Warren has pointed, the Askisa, and you'll run out of space there trying to put all these plans on your, fit them all in your paper, nothing on the ground.
Mm. But it's always shifting sands, like economy shift. Yeah. But I want to talk about this past year. We're talking about now, it's sort of being a copy and paste, but in the past year, there's been all these commissions, all that have come out, all this fallout has happened. When it comes to focus on exposing, at least, corruption. I mean, in terms of arresting people, we still, well, today there was some excitement over Greasy being arrested, but there is this exposure, at least, of what's been happening for the past 9 years. And it's almost like we discussed in the 9 years, and there has been some movement with regards to what he promised then. So at least there's exposure of it. We want NPA to be working and so on.
I mean, when it comes to the commissions, I'm probably less pessimistic than other people. Like, yes. I probably take the same view as you.
Yes.
I mean, it's quite a unique democracy that sort of allowed itself to be opened up like that and have all these skeletons come out at the same time over a certain period. I mean, sometimes we act as if we're the only country in the world that's got corruption.
Yeah.
But we're far from that. I mean, I can't imagine even developed countries, let alone like developing countries having
these kind of
commissions.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, especially 3 months. I think it's an opportunity for the country in a way sort of to cleanse itself. It's almost like an unofficial truth called TRC in a way. Mm. And some people might have arguments about the value or non-value of these things. But for me, the fact that these things are coming out in the open is really testimony to our democracy. And obviously, like, it would be good if there's a follow-up and then people actually are held to account. And there's no reason to think they won't be.
Mm.
But I think we have to be patient. I mean, you said that these institutions were destroyed. I mean, the NPA is just being rebuilt.
Yes, now.
SARS is being rebuilt.
Yes, all of them have been rebuilt.
I mean, like, in fairness to Ramaphosa, I mean, we talk about him like being all talk. But but when you actually sit back and soberly look at what has happened in about a year, less than a year, I mean, there's actually been quite an impressive list of achievements, you know.
Siko, I know you were the first when it came to commissions. We had this argument about the value of them. They have revealed a lot about the inner workings of the state and the ANC over the past year.
Definitely.
Yeah.
We agree on that. We now know. We have to tap ourselves on the back as journalists as a start. They had no choice but to follow through. So they have indeed done it.
Mm.
And all of this is now a testimony under oath. The key question is, after you've known all of this truth, just like we knew all of the truth about the Truth Commission, what then? Now, don't you get excited. Let me remind you. So today, Angelo Akritzi and six people have been arrested.
Mm. Exactly, it's a new NPA. It's a
exactly
new
a year day. Ago,
yes.
On this date,
yep.
last year, down the road here at the Gupta compound, they came and raided the home, and the people at Estina Dairy were arrested. How many are on trial today?
Yep.
Exactly zero are on trial today. So carry on, get excited.
But there's a new NPA head who started her job this week.
New
so it's,
NPA.
It's kind of
one person makes it a new NPA, like one swallow makes summer.
Okay. The reason why we don't want Seko next to me, we'd have an argument. But with regards to the Power Protector, there was Tudima Donsela, who was a fire, and she really carried this country forward. They changed heads, and that office is dead. So one person can change an organization and the whole culture and how it's driven. So I would disagree with you there.
Please, let me agree with you then. One person, Cyril Ramaphosa, has come in and changed things. Now we know the truth. There were arrests and nobody is being prosecuted. Mm. Today, Shamila Bahoud-Batohi is on her fourth day in the office.
Yep.
There's been arrests. Talk to me next year this time.
Okay, no, we will talk to you. Warren, what do you say the past year? I mean, you were a very investigative financial reporter. PIC has been in the news. There's been big board fallout with it. An inquiry started again over the past year. What's your take of the whole... I mean, unraveling of the ugliness of the state of us. Basically.
Yeah, it's that tweet or the comments, I think, by President Ramaphosa about a wasted 9 years.
Yeah.
And certainly, I think if you look across the commissions of inquiry that are looking into how the NPA was decimated under President Zuma's tenure, But we also saw, I think 2018 was really the year we saw private sector corruption.
Yeah.
Once we realized that the NPA had been eviscerated, it let not only the criminals in the public service, but across the private spectrum, operate without any sort of worry. And clearly, the fact that Marcus Huster is still living a happy life down in the Cape,
yeah,
without even the need to flee the country, is indicative of just how unworried a man with his resources is when it comes to being prosecuted by our crimes. On the other side, we saw the resilient stable.
People without resources are not worried about being prosecuted in this country.
Yeah.
That's just the fact of the matter.
Exactly. Mm. And the same applied, you know, with more lower level investigations by regulatory agencies like the Financial Services Commission. They've been looking into resilient for a year now.
Yeah.
And we haven't heard anything on the outcome. So it is a massive task, I think, the likes of Shamila Botoy, as well as the executives at SARS, have in rebuilding the country's capacity to prosecute crime.
What do you think about these five countries, our biggest trading partners, coming out, I don't know, a memo or whatever came out in Sunday Times over the past week, and them urging us, urging the country to deal with this corruption, I don't know, perception, whatever case may be?
I mean, you know, there is a bit of controversy about this memo, or whether it was a memo, or what it was aimed at, or whether it was just like talking points.
Yes.
But I suppose that, I mean, maybe we can forget about the memo itself and talk about the issues. Mm. I mean, the issues, like, I don't think very few people would disagree with them. I mean, they're talking about more policy certainty, like rule of law and these kind of things. Mm. And I doubt anybody here or in government would disagree.
Is it any way an intrusion on our sovereignty as a country? Do you think them voicing this on that platform?
I mean, from what I can gather, they were asked for their opinions. This was a consultation.
Yes.
Where you asked me for your opinion, because we were preparing for the investment summit.
Mm.
How do we create an enabling environment? And then you as a friend, you gave me an answer. Mm. And then somehow, and then a year later, and it becomes controversial.
Mm.
So it's a bit confusing.
Cyril has been asking for advice on how to fix this country.
Yeah.
And friends of this country have given him that advice indeed. Now, does he not like the advice that he's getting?
Yes. Perhaps it is. It is like, I mean, it's a local domestic issue. So maybe there's all the certainty with the ANC being told what to do from external
sources. Well, this country has always lived on foreign direct investment.
Yeah.
And those ambassadors, those countries represent the biggest investors in this country. If they are to invest, exactly, there must be the rule of law. And we've been harping on about this for the past 3 years on this show. I'm sure if we were in charge of this country, things would have been better.
Oh, okay. This week's also quite a busy week in Cape Town. There's the mining indaba there where Ramaphosa, alongside Gwede Motlatsi, had to reassure investors that this is the place to mine. How do you think the feedback has been going? You've been covering it. Look at you.
Maybe I could. You know what I think, Ron, just from following is from here? It was quite interesting that actually the biggest talking point there was not a mining company at all.
Mm.
The biggest talking point there has been Eskom.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, if you had any doubts about the kind of dangers that Eskom holds for the economy, I think you had like Anglo's Makatufani there saying this is our biggest risk in this country.
Mm.
I mean, you've had. You know, this happens at the time when Eskom is trying to impose even bigger increases on it.
Yeah.
I think they're asking for something like 17% and then 15 and 15. So I think if you compound that, it's like something, another 50% or something over the next 3 years.
Mm.
And you had the mining industry body saying this will totally destroy the sector, 150,000 jobs. It puts us into context. You know, we have this debate about Eskom. It has 50,000 workers. How much of those can we cut? Can we afford to cut any of those?
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we never really talk about the wider repercussions of doing nothing. So 150,000 jobs in mining seemingly don't mean anything, whereas maybe like 15,000 at Eskom mean the world. So
exactly.
I think this is one of the things that has come up from those discussions that need to be taken seriously.
Mm.
I mean, even all this talk about restructuring about Eskom, so unless you're going to know more about this. But they haven't even gone to those points, and so it's hard to see how.
We don't feel like the mining industry kind of holds the country to hostage. Siko, do you think Eskom's tariffs are too low for it to be a sustainable business right now? It's like as hard as it is to say, given our poor economic performance, but do you think their tariffs are too low to fund its infrastructure, drive and maintenance and the rest and the
Eskom's
like?
What? costs are too high.
Yeah. And what are those costs? What is
those costs? One is corruption.
Okay, we know the corruption deal. What are
Eskom employs 16,000 more people than it should, producing exactly the same amount of power 31,000 people produced in 2007. So what are the 15? And I'm not talking about the people building power stations. Those are outside of the utility. They are contractors. They are not in the 46,000 people that work there. What are the 16,000 people doing? If they are producing exactly the same amount of power Eskom produced in 2007. So that's the start. And of course, Eskom is the only buyer of coal in this country. If you're not going to sell up coal to Eskom, you've got to put it on a train down to the coast and outside of South Africa. Not many miners can do that. So it buys about 80, 60 billion rand worth of coal every year. No competition. Yet the prices keep increasing at about 16, 18%.
Well, it's more lucrative to go outside, right?
It's more lucrative to go so outside, but not. But Eskom has got long-term contracts. First, that supply the bulk of the fuel. Then it's got short-term suppliers who can really be pressed on price because they've got no one else to sell it to. If you don't want to sell to Eskom, then you'll have to build a railway line to your mine. A siding and take it to Richards Bay for export. Yet the costs keep increasing at about three times the rate of inflation.
So you say there are two things to Eskom's help. They need to cut staff, as you say, 16,000. Yes. And they need to deal with coal prices.
Definitely.
And this is why the mining doubled.
And they need a commission of inquiry into what's happened at Medupi and Kusile, because we've learned that the costs, which I believe across the two of them have at least doubled from the initial expectation, they're now talking about 8 billion rand just to fix what's already been built.
Yeah.
So that's risen from 1.5, 2 billion rand at the end of last year to 8 billion rand now. You have to think they're probably going to raise that again. So we're looking at 10 billion rands worth of work or more to go back and fix what's already been built.
There's really low-hanging fruit there. We don't need another commission. We need arrests. If anyone needs to know who needs to be arrested, go read Business Day and Financial Mail over the past 3 years. So that's the thing. But at the mining Indaba, what Cyril did raise and Kwadi Mantashe was, guys, we will give you the certainty in terms of our mining law. We'll separate the oil and the fuels economy out of mining, and we'll create an environment that can allow you to invest. The train may have left the station already, though. All the major gold mining companies have left South Africa.
But it's a sunset industry. Regardless of Eskom's tariffs, gold mining is. We must all come to that agreement.
We've definitely
mined it out.
No, not necessarily mined it out, but we really, through uncertainty and through the disastrous tenure of Museveni's one and Jacob Zuma, we really have killed what was left of the mine. Think of the icons of mining, the biggest mines in the world. We're here in South Africa. Anglo Gold Ashanti has no operations in this country. You've got gold fields with just a single operation. The only company that has been sticking to South Africa and pure gold play, Harmony. The rest are not investing here.
And gold fields with South Deep.
Oh, well, good luck to you.
With that mechanized mine, the Zone Goldfield, which hasn't quite reached its promise all these years later.
What Cyril and Gwede Mantashe are trying to do is claw back South Africa's stature and allow people to again start putting money into mining in South Africa, which at the moment is not happening, and you cannot fault the mining companies for doing that. You had a question as to whether
mining is
holding this country to ransom.
Yes.
This country is holding mining to ransom.
But you know, as much as we talk about mining in Durban, now political uncertainty, but over the past 10 years, commodity prices have been underperforming. So as much almost as justification for not further, there's no money going in any case in mining globally. That was my argument, whether we almost held to ransom by a mining industry which doesn't have a market to invest in any case. There's no one putting money in any mining company globally, right?
Maybe we shouldn't reduce us to mining. I mean, this is industry across the board. This just means manufacturers are also suffering. So it's not just a case of, it's just because maybe there's a mining in Durban that we're talking about mining industry, but manufacturers across the country, like and all sorts of businesses that say they could say we can't afford this. I mean, Mbusa was made a big point in saying, actually, not only with these increases, put like unbearable strain on the rest of the economy, they will actually destroy Eskom itself. You know, that whole concept of a death spiral.
Yeah.
Because then people like you who can afford to pay are going to be like, I can't pay this. I'm just going to go put stuff like and go off the grid, off the completely. You know, it's just, so you have fewer customers, and then you want to charge those customers more, and then what happens? More of them leave. So in the end, you're actually destroying yourself. You know, you're not actually building a sustainable.
So fundamentally, the only fix to Eskom is that structural, the breakup of Eskom, and to get foreign shareholders to get invest in Eskom. That's like just having this discussion with you guys just kind of points to that the only solution here is for foreign money to come in.
The discipline of private investors who will demand a return.
Yes,
they'll put money there and demand a return. And to get a proper return on your investment, you have to get the governance right, you have to get the operations right, you've got the cost right. Of course, you will get to that after dealing with the big elephant in the room, 420 billion rand of debt.
Yes.
That you need to tackle. Yes. Cyril Ramaphosa is going to make a comment, or Tito Mboweni, the following week, about whether or not, well, where they will find the 100 billion rand that Eskom needs immediately.
Yeah.
I've been harping on this show about how much cash we need to put into Eskom.
Yeah.
That question has to be answered in the State of the Nation address and in the budget.
Which brings us to, I guess, going into election season, we know the unions are against anything with regards to Eskom. Unfortunately, this whole show is in a version of Eskom and Mining Indaba. EFF manifesto. I mean, the political contestation, will the EFF be happy with a breakup of Eskom? But just, have you guys followed what Julius and his band of brothers have been saying over the past weekend?
I think, Ron, I think just briefly, I haven't studied the manifesto in detail, but it's quite fantastical how they've made promises that there's just no basis in reality of being able to sustain. So besides nationalizing land as well as half the industry, including mining, they want the economy to grow at 6% within a year, as well as being able to disperse almost unlimited amount of funds to students that want to study further.
Without raising taxes.
Without raising taxes. No plan around how this is all going to be paid for.
They specifically said they will raise taxes on private companies. Julius didn't say to what extent will he increase the taxes. So as to pay, he's got this whole thing figured out in his mind. Everyone has got a minimum wage. Like, forget the 3,000 rands that I was talking about. The barest minimum wage will be 4,500 rands. And there you go. He dreams on. But you need not worry about that stuff. What you do need to worry about, we led with this in Business Day on Monday, nationalization of land. The EFF wants outright nationalization and there will be no private ownership. The ANC has agreed to a very strict expropriation without compensation. Where the EFF matters is that it will come in with, let's give it the 11% all the pollsters are giving it. ANC coming in at just under 60%. The only way the ANC will get a two-thirds majority to amend the constitution will be to get the EFF's vote. The DA has already said it's not supporting any amendment to the constitution. So the EFF and ANC have to agree on a position. You want outright nationalization, we will qualify nationalization. Can we talk? That's the only thing that will be implemented out of the EFF's manifesto. Of course, it's a good 168 pages of document, including gems such as we will, as the EFF, increase the budget of this country to 2 trillion rand by 2017.
Wait, 2017?
No,
okay, that was a copy. Come on, there's a bit of a mistake. Let's be kind to them.
An exact copy from the 2014 manifesto.
Yeah.
And just put it there and nobody bothered
to
read it.
No one bothered to like read that part.
So they will increase the economy and borrow and everything by 2017. we will manage it.
Your take on this economy. On this manifesto. Back, I guess it's manifesto season.
Back to the future then, I suppose. But but then, as Ekonati says, I think the most important thing is the whole land issue. I suppose, you're assuming that the ANC is committed to the expropriation. So like you say, if it got 55, that it would feel compelled to get into alliance or some kind of the AFF to get to
the majority. The point is, what it's a parliamentary process. Yeah. Now in parliament, there is a process to amend the constitution. Mm. So that will be resolved by a vote of a two-thirds majority. Mm. That's where the discussion will have to happen.
I mean, it'd be interesting as well. Like, I mean, I think for investors and for landowners, for the whole country, because there's an impact on everybody, is how far the ANC then could be pushed out of its like existing stance. Mm. Because obviously the AFF, is like where the ANC stands now, it's not going to be good enough for the AFF.
Yeah.
So then the question is, if the ANC does need those AFF voters, and how far will it move? So to create a lot of uncertainty.
Cleverly, the whole thing will be delayed, the process in parliament, until after the election, when the ANC will be under no pressure. At this point, you won't come in parliament and say, no, we're not nationalizing. But after the election, you can.
Yeah. I mean, we could go on and on about this discussion about nationalization of land. Unfortunately, our time is up. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hopefully, we'll see you next week. Good night.